And I'm literally at work, and like on my lunch break, I get a call from my rap manager, and he's like, "Hey, do you know how to DJ?" And I was just like, "Yeah, totally." And he was like, "All right, great. You got to play tonight. You're on at 8, opening up for this dude, Ryan Hemsworth." And I was like, "Sick, yeah." And hung up the phone, and I was like, "Oh my God, I don't know how to DJ at all."
You're listening to the
Frio Music Podcast.
The Frio Music
Podcast.
Every night, so my life is so blessed. 12-hour doubles, I stay productive. Glory, baby, sounds so seductive. I've got one head held high, 2 feet stepping in against the stride. The good Lord knows I'm meant to survive.
What's up, everybody? I'm Danny Costello. I go by Underlux. And, I make a bunch of music. So I guess we're going to talk about that today.
Nice. Well, where are you from, Danny?
I'm originally from Western Mass and then moved out to Boston, which I guess I would call my home. And then I've been here for 3 years.
Early in your life, like how did you get introduced to music? What was your introduction to it?
My whole family is really just kind of music people, from, you know, singing bedtime lullabies to everybody in the car, piano. My uncle was actually first chair violinist and then went on to conduct the Berlin Symphony Orchestra for 35 years. So music's been, you know, my whole life. I think my first official band started in third grade. And then we just played real, real bad Blink-182 covers and kind of cool. Progressed from there.
Nice. Nice. And what was your kind of branching off point into the electronic space?
So I guess I would have to shout out my homie Kelly Hines, who really showed me electronic music. I grew up playing guitar, singing, and then I got real into rapping. I used to be a big rapper out of Boston, and I always was producing stuff. Once I couldn't play in bands anymore, you know, I just started with like simple drum loops in a garage band. And then when I went on to rapping, I would make, you know, my side hustle was producing beats for kids. One day I was going to go hang out with my friend and I was like, "Yeah, we can chill. I just got to like finish this beat for this kid." And she was like, "Oh, you can actually make stuff?" And I was like, "Kinda." And she showed me some Pretty Lights stuff and was like, "Make something like this instead." And I was just like, "Okay." And then that took off and fell in love with it and learned much more about genres and had a bunch of different friend groups going to shows. You know, you got the kids who are strictly house or strictly bass or whatever, and I kind of always wanted to take in as much information and liked all the genres. So went from not even knowing, you know, that this music was available to now being super, you know, dedicated and in depth, and I try and be knowledgeable about the genres, but there's so many subgenres this day and age, you know?
Yeah, no kidding. And where do you really draw the line from one to the other? It's a tricky thing for me. It's nice to be able to search and kind of filter into the music that you like.
Yeah.
But it is so difficult to categorize music into genres, I think.
Yeah. I find it funny / like a constant conversation I have with my friends. Like I will just call everything I do EDM, right? And people in this scene, like one of my good friends since July, like hates that term, gets so upset when I say that what we do is EDM, because he's like, "No, it's electro soul, like get it right." And I just have never really cared that much, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I guess if I'm like really categorizing it, it's just like BPMs, you know?
Yeah.
Like 120 through 128's house, 110s Moomba, you know, all that dubsteps in 140 or 75 or however you want to do it. But
what's yours?
So my, I would say preferred that I produce the most around is like 170 BPM or like 90 BPM, just a hip hop type thing. And I would say what I make the most is like electro soul, Livetronica, funk step. But yeah, I whenever I'm producing or performing, I intentionally try and blur the lines as much as possible. Not like, you know, if I play a bass show, I'm just like, all right, well, how can I mix in some house and have them still like it? Or how can I get heavy with people who are more jammy? So that's like always one of my things that keeps me entertained on stage. It's like, how can I play a genre that they would hate on, but like still get them dancing, you know, mix it in properly, try and trick them a little bit to explore new tastes and sounds.
Yeah, that's cool. So wanted to talk a little bit about some of your more recent tracks. And first of all, are you working on anything coming up? You mentioned something a little earlier. I don't know if you want to share about it now.
Yeah. So yeah, once we're done with this, I got to record this set for Android Jones. He's doing a whole virtual visual production. I know it's for me, Funk Static, Vincent Atone. I know those are the people who are in my management circle, so I'm sure he's doing other artists. But yeah, working on that, super stoked on it. It's going to be a 100% original set, and like even normally I'll say 100% original, but there might be like two or three songs that I kind of have a drop in or whatever. But I now have enough songs and not enough time, so it's going to be, you know, 23 original tracks. I think 9 of them are unreleased. And yeah, I got one that I'm super excited about, which is going to be, you know, a work in progress in this set, but I got it close enough where I'm fine with people listening to it, even if it's not the finished product. But yeah, that'll be super fun.
Nice. Nice. Well, along those lines, when do you know a project is done or a mix is complete?
I really don't think you ever know. I mean, I've always said, I think when I first moved here, you know, some of my friends were like, all right, what are your goals? Like, you want to play Red Rocks or do this? And I've always said my, you know, number one goal is to have a song that I'm 100% satisfied with, because I feel like once I have that, everything else will fall in line anyways. And you know, you feel like you get close as you get better and you learn your own sound or how you want things to go. But then you're always just like, ah, damn, you know, should I have changed that break? Or if I extended this, would it sound better? And you never really know. So now it's just like, if I can get the mixing down, I'm like, all right, it doesn't sound like, you know, garbage, then I'm fine playing it out. Even if I'm like, oh, I might change the melody or the vocals or something like that. But like, as long as it sounds good over the speakers, then I consider it good enough to play and test.
Nice. Nice. So some artists, I think, potentially take the approach of using the live performance as a test ground to kind of hone the mix and get the call and response, or, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I do the same thing, because it's definitely like you can see where people like it or, you know, where they don't. Or I've even played, there's this one track that I'm working on with these dudes, Essenite, who are super dope. And I used to play it out with basically like the instrument samples and the bass line and no leads or anything. And people still like that.
Nice.
And I was like, so, oh, well, they're groove. Really going to like it. Yeah. Once I throw in, you know, some things that are more exciting. But it's actually one of the like hardest parts about producing during the pandemic was that you didn't really have the shows to test your stuff out. So it was like when I just released an EP I want to say 2 weeks ago. It's called Some Love. And I had never played any of those songs out to a crowd. And I was like, I like it, you know, my associates like it, but without like getting the real reaction from real people and being able to tweak it, it's hard to be like, oh yeah, I'm super confident in this, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's interesting. Cause your friends and people close to you might not give you the same reaction as like a stranger would, you know, in a show.
Absolutely. And I was actually, I have this conversation all the time too. I find it really helpful, but also really interesting to send songs to my producer friends because, you know, they'll give really good feedback. But you can also kind of tell that they are giving an opinion based on like their own flavor.
Yeah.
So like if I send you a song and they're just like, oh, you should do this instead. I'm like, should I do that instead because it'll make it better? Or it's because of what you would personally do instead.
Yeah. Cause they get super specific feedback based on their own style or taste.
Right. Right. Which is always appreciated and never wrong. But then it also gets you kind of second guessing yourself even more. Cause you're like, oh, is that lead, you know, could it be better? Or, so it's nice to have a lot of friends who aren't, you know, producers, but who are in the scene and understand good music. So to get like a simple, yes, that sounds good, or nah, it sounds, you know, unprofessional or a little weird.
Yeah. That makes sense. So when you are mixing, when do you know, like, do you work with negative space or when do you stop adding layers on?
I guess kind of work in reverse.
Okay.
Where I start with a ton of layers and a ton of sounds. And then I delete, until, you know, I have a finished project. But I think it's funny with a lot of my friends, I think a lot of my songs are busier than most. Like there's this song, Go Mommy. All these horn samples, and it sounds like one cohesive or one or two like horns playing the whole time, but I think it was really like 27 or 35 horn samples that took and chopped up. It's a tough question too, to also like have the confidence to just be like, oh, this lead line, you know, doesn't need anything else. But that once again comes out and kind of as you're playing, you get it. I think this dude, Hero Bust, one time was telling me, he was like, oh, the best thing to do, especially like when you're working on something, is just bounce it out and try and mix it into something. And if it sounds like two songs going into each other, then you're good. If it sounds like a finished song going into, you know, some crap, then you need to work on it more.
So when you start with, what's your first layer?
With me, normally it's like a sample or a pad, like something with a melody. I love samples. I love hunting for them.
What are your favorite sources for the hunt?
I really just use Splice, which is a phenomenal program, but it's funny because everybody that I know has Splice. And then they'll be like, where'd you find that sample? I'm like, on Splice. And then they're just like, no way. I'm just like, yes. Or I'll have a vocal and they're like, how'd you find that? I'm just like, on Splice. But I also take like hours to scroll through and then, you know, chop them up or twist them, in a certain way. But yeah, the melody is really the biggest thing for me. If it's a pad or a little intro, I think a lot of people, and even like a lot of tutorials, will tell you, like, make your drop first, you know, have like an 8-bar loop. And I've always found a lot of difficulty in that, because then you have like, I don't know, some banging 8-bar loop, and then you're just like, all right, well, how do I get there? You know, I kind of like to start with the intro and the journey and the build, and then that all kind of dictates where I'm going to bring it or how I'm going to have it hit.
Interesting. Cool. Well, appreciate you walking me through it. So what are your favorite like plugins, VSTs, things like that, that you like to use?
So when I'm mixing, Ozone Imager is awesome. Really just takes the sound and spreads it out, and really fills up your track. You do have to be careful with that, because you can get phasing issues. And then I like this VST called Icarus, and that's where I get like a lot of my, not necessarily like my drop leads, but all my breakdowns and my intros and my pads and stuff I get from there. I don't necessarily think it's the best program in the world, but I like that it has a lot of original sounding stuff. And then other, like a lot of my mixing or effects is just stock Ableton stuff. Just because I think once you learn how to use them, you can really get the same results as like more expensive plugins, and you're not also wasting you know, a lot of space on your computer. And it also makes collabing easier, because there's so many times when, you know, you're working on a collab or you're transferring files back and forth, and
one person has a plugin, the other doesn't.
Yeah. And that way it's like, oh, if you have Ableton, we're working on Ableton, you're going to have the effects that I have. So, not to say that, I mean, I think plugins are dope and they're getting crazier and crazier, but
yeah. Any that come to mind in the crazy category?
Let's see. Like, let me take a gander at what I got that I do use a lot. I like Glitch. There's Glitch 2, which is kind of fun to really just like kind of make your stuff a little crazy and chop it up. And then there's one, I'm not gonna find it on here because it's buried somewhere, but there's this sick basically just like a guitar amp, and it's got a million different amps. At Homemade Spaceship, and I used on our track Hot Tension. Really just take it and put it on anything. It's just distortion, but it's got like a lot of really cool presets and options to make your stuff sound distorted and fun.
Nice. When do you make music? Are you very consistent with it, or do you kind of work in kind of flows?
I would say, I was having the same conversation the other day. I really, mentally, I think I'm constantly working on music. Like when I wake up, the first thing I do is, you know, grab my phone, try and like shoot a text to my manager, think about upcoming projects, stuff like that. But that when I'm actually physically sitting down, it's normally like once a week in like a 20-hour music marathon. Or even I kind of like to purposefully not produce, because makes everything feel more fresh, easier ideas. And that way, when I'm like, all right, you know, I've got 3 days going to work on something, I'm just like overflowing with ideas. And they all kind of come streaming out so quick. I feel like if I'm physically working on, you know, a track every day, then it just becomes stale, because I'm, you know, using similar tricks or similar sounds or beats. But yeah, I think one thing that I'm trying to work on is to, like, there's so much that you can work on that's not actually making a song, like whether it's building presets or, you know, getting a good effects rack that you can use, and doing like even file management in your computer.
Totally. Yeah, you gotta be organized when you keep building
stuff. Yeah, that's what I feel like. I'm such a mess sometimes where I, you know, even when you're DJing with a friend and you look at like their USB and how they have everything, that it's like, oh, my 120 through 128 BPM dark tracks, or, you know, it's all stacked up by genres or moods. And then you put my USB and it's just like every show I've ever played. And so I'm just like, oh, well, I know that I played this song in that show, so I'm going to go there. But I am not the greatest at file management or organization, which I think sometimes works as, you know, something that's beneficial because things are more new to me because I'm just doing it, you know, over again or in a different way.
What purchase have you made in the last like 6 months for $100 or less that has most improved your life?
Oh, boy. $100 or less that's improved my life. Honestly, it's probably not even for music. I think it was like a new pair of shoes for work that made me less tired, you know.
Nice.
I bartend also, and I gotta tell you, it's really tough to work a night job and then come home and also have another night job, you know what I mean? And when you're on your feet, it's tiring. So I think being comfortable during the day is, you know, nice. Something that has improved my work. I also having similar conversations where it's like, when I first moved here, I was producing in CBS headphones because I had no money. And I also was like, oh, I'm going to be like, you know, the Eminem of electronic music, like working out of CBS headphones, doing whatever I could do to make it. And then my buddy Sodown was just like, dude, get better stuff and be better. Like, yeah, that sounds like a cool story on paper, but if your songs sound like they're being produced in CBS headphones, no one's really going to care about the story. So I think that, you know, there's a lot of purchases, even just like fresh fruits, something like that, you know, making your life better, giving you more energy or brain power to work, can be more beneficial than like a super sick plugin that will take you forever to learn, or you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, that's great. What major turning points in your life have led you towards music? You mentioned your girlfriend showing you Pretty Lights kind of shifted that direction, but when did you know that, like, I'm all in on music and I'm going to make this work?
Yeah. I think that came, we were talking last week, how, grew up my whole life playing sports. Was a pretty big lacrosse player. It was a huge part of my life. And then in college, you know, it was pretty serious. Our team, you know, winning conference champs every year. I was playing with kids from Canada, New Zealand, all over. It's like a really high pressure, intense situation for a kid to be 18, you know, moving out and then doing something like that with such intensity every day.
What position did you play?
I played attack.
Okay.
Yeah. I played goalie, up until my junior year of high school. And then we had like a couple injuries and I was just like, I can do whatever the team needs. And, scoring goals is a lot more fun than saving goals. So I stuck with that. And then when I went to college, I got hurt, snapped a deltoid, exposed all these nerves. So I got nerve damage, and it was just like a stressful, sad time in my life. And when I couldn't practice, really the only thing I had was music. And I remember I used to play guitar a ton, and because of my nerves, the way it was, I like couldn't really play guitar. And even my trainers were like, you know, you'll get a lot better a lot sooner if you stop like playing guitar and rest. And I remember one day being in my room and like looking at my guitar and like not being able to pick it up, and then just having that thing where being like, screw this, I'd rather play, like, this is more therapeutic than lacrosse ever was. And so then I ended up leaving that college and, you know, got even more hurt because I had a warehouse job, stacking groceries and stuff like that. And I really couldn't do anything except produce. And that's when I was like, I'm just going to do this forever. It makes the most sense, you know, gratuitous.
Yeah. Interesting. And do you enjoy the process of building out a song? Is that like something that you enjoy doing?
Totally. Yeah, no, I love like producing, getting melodies together, finding vocal samples. It's the best. I think my least favorite is mixing, just because, you know, you listen to these cats, and you're just like, how the heck did he get, you know,
that sound out of this?
Yeah. And not even that sound, but how did he get that sound to sound so clean? You know?
Oh yeah.
Like I, one of these works in progress, these tracks that I'm super excited on because I, you know, was making these sounds, kind of using a Jansen reference track. And I was just like in awe. I was like, man, this guy's got similar to what I'm going on, but I was like, but it just sounds so clean. And you can really, I find that like I could lay down a melody in, you know, 15, 20 minutes and be like, sweet, this is a super hot melody. But I could then take that and mix it for days and be like, ah, you know, how do we get it crisp? But even then, I feel like because mixing might be my least favorite part, it's the most gratuitous for when I actually, you know, figure it out or get it done. Just like, yeah, that was a ton of work, and it feels good to never have to do it again for song, you know?
Let it loose.
Yeah.
You know, this is, I don't mean to pick on you personally. I like to ask all artists this, but do you struggle with perfectionism? And like, if so, how do you deal with that in order to release something and then like start fresh again? Because if you get hung up on a track for too long, you lose that creative flow to the next one.
Absolutely. Yeah, I feel like that's a huge part in a ton of, you know, ton of our lives. I think with me, it's a really big thing because just like, oh, you know, I could make it better. And also at this point in my career, I know that people are going to listen to my stuff when I release it, but I don't feel like people are like dying, sweating and be like, oh, you need to release a track, I'm going to die, you know? So I feel like I have enough time to kind of sit on it, and make it better. But I've started to just give myself deadlines, and then be like, all right, like you have a month and either the song works or doesn't. And if you don't get it done by then, you know, then you got to move on. I think that was with this last EP that I released, Some Love, kind of contradictory because the one song I feel about it, it was the single for it. Been working on that song for 5 years because I just like knew the idea was really tight, but the execution was just not hitting. And I think Homemade Spaceship will do the final masters for me, And I remember he texted me back. He was like, dude, I've mastered like 6 different versions of this. And I was like, I know you have, but I swear to God, this is the last version. But then there's another track on there. I think it's called Love the Way. And that one I busted out in like a day and was just like, listen, like clean it up. Don't get fancy with it. It's a song, you know. I sent it to Maddie O'Neill and she was like, yeah, pass the car test. And I'm like, all right, great. She's, you know, it's good. Let's get rid of it and never think about it again, yeah. Basically.
Well, give it to everybody else. Share it with the world.
Right, right.
Yeah, that's great. What was the best investment that you've ever made? It could be money or time. Maybe learning a new software, learning something, or maybe something not music related that's personal that...
Yeah, I think the best investment that I ever made was time. Especially now. I mean, my career path is real different, especially like literally I went from being a rapper and a hip hop producer to playing a show, out of nowhere, and then just started getting, you know, EDM shows and dubstep shows. And so I was kind of learning everything as I was doing it. But also I know I spent a ton of my youth, going out and partying really to promote myself. But I remember there was a turning point where I was like, all right, well, like, you know, I can sell enough tickets and get real good shows, but other than me, like being able to DJ, I don't really have anything to show for it. So having the discipline to kind of sit down and be like, all right, well, I'm not going out for 6 months and I'm working on what I need to work on, has really, you know, helped me progress. Cause, I know a lot of sick DJs who are super respected and, I think what they do is dope, but I think if you're, you know, if you want to be a touring artist or someone with like a real deep impact, that you need to make your own music. So just putting in the time to do that.
Nice.
I think it's the most important.
Yeah, that's a great answer. Yeah, it takes time. And I'm glad that you said that you're learning on the way, because I feel like that's the best way. You know, you got to move forward and learn as you're going. Keep improving, iterating.
Right. That's like what we were talking about with, it's like, when do you know if it's ready? It's like, even, you know, even now, I don't know if it's ready or, you know, I was saying this the other day, like I play 100% original sets and it's super scary because you play a song that someone's never heard before and you're like, all right, you know, if you didn't like that song, here's another one from me. You don't get like playing a banger that everybody knows to kind of save you from that. But I also think that that's really, you know, helped make me where I am, or, you know, risking it and putting the vulnerability out there. Because, I mean, I know, like, I'll go to after hours and stuff like that, and kids will be sick DJs or show me songs that are dope. And I'm just like, oh, like, what, you know, what are you doing with it? And they're just like, oh, nothing. You know, I'm not good enough yet or whatever. And I'm like, no, you're definitely good enough. You just got to, you know, take the dive.
Yeah. So what gave you the confidence to take the dive yourself?
I think that having already played shows,
And how'd you get the first show then?
You know, the first DJ show.
Yeah. The first show that was like impactful to you, whatever that show was.
So that show, which made me become a DJ instead of a rapper, was actually, I had back in Boston, there's this rap, production, Leeds Edutainment, and they were managing me. And then they throw all these shows all over. And then they had this guy, Aaron, who was Bean Dream Productions, working under them, and he did all of the electronic shows. And I'm literally at work, and like on my lunch break, I get a call from my rap manager, and he's like, hey, do you know how to DJ? And I was just like, yeah, totally. And he was like, all right, great. You got to play tonight. You're on at 8, opening up for this dude, Ryan Hemsworth. And I was like, sick. Yeah. And, hung up the phone and I was like, oh my God, I don't know how to DJ at all. And I went back from my lunch break and I was like, yo, emergency, I gotta go home. And they're like, okay.
How'd your boss take that? Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. Well, my boss at the time, actually, he's still in this heavy metal band.
Okay, so he got it.
Great American Ghost. Yeah, he's super dope. So he understood. But yeah, sent me home, and I think I ripped like every hip hop EDM mashup thing I could off of YouTube, and I downloaded like Virtual DJ Pro. And I literally show up to the show and the promoter's like, all right, like, what are your ins and outs? Like, what are your decks? And I was like, yeah, just give me an aux cord. And he was like, what? I was like, yeah, just give me an aux cord. I'm going to plug into my computer and play off of it. And he still laughs about it to this day. Cause he was like, I was so mad cause he blatantly lied. But then I played a sick show. Like, I remember this kid who did like the coat check at the venue for years would still talk about like how much he loved that first set he heard from me. And then off of that show, they were like, hey, do you want to open up for RJD2 in a month, who I had known because I used to rap over all of his instrumentals. Like, I still didn't understand that was like a crossover of DJs and stuff. And I was like, oh, heck yeah. And so as soon as I got booked for that, I bought some decks and I learned how to actually DJ and just went from there. So really, I think everybody should just, you know, fake it till you make it kind of deal and give it a shot. You know, I think I kind of lucked out with that one. It could have gone disastrous and I could have been blacklisted. But, you know, luckily I pulled it together.
Nice. I love that you just had the confidence to go for it, to say that you knew how to do it, and then you figured it out real quick and kind of scrambled together. Other than that show, did you have any like epic potential failures, or at least seen in the eyes of someone else, like, I don't know, parents or teachers or whatever, that later set you up for success other than that show?
Totally. There was one show which will like go down in history. It's probably the best thing for my career where I never actually played, where I was booked, for this Black Tiger Sex Machine show. And they honestly used to be my heroes and everyone was stoked. I was the only local support. And so like everybody's going and I'm at doors. And it's in Boston. There's like 75 kids waiting in line just to get in to hear my set. And right before I go on, BTSM's manager was like, all right, just wanted to like make sure you're only playing tech house. And I was just like, nope, I'm playing dubstep. And he was just like, nope, you're playing tech house, or else, you know, you can't play. And I was just like, geez, like I was in the rider, I guess. And, you know, it was lost in translation. And so I'm looking, you know, in my song catalog and I'm just like, all right, well, any house track you got, like throw it on there. So I literally press play right away. The guy's like, nope, too heavy. I'm just like, okay. And then I like try and mix into another house track. He's like, nope, too heavy. He's like, you got like one more chance. And then I'm just yanking you. And throwing on an iPod. Like, okay. And at this point, like a bunch of people are there, you know, they're all my closest friends. They're also from Boston. So it's a bunch of hardos who like, you know, are ready to chirp and see something's going on. So I play another song and the guy's like, no, you're done, and yanks me. And, so then he just throws on an iPod and absolute like chaos ensues. Like everybody just starts booing, going absolutely bonkers, on the like event page, absolutely trashing everybody. And then I'm catching a ton of heat. And you know, the guys who came off of their tour bus and they're like, you need to tell everybody to calm down. I was just like, I will. I don't know what to tell you though. You know, and like people, the promoters came and they apologized to me. It was like, you know, a mix up, but, everybody was reaching out to me because it was such a huge thing. And like, even during their whole set, like people were chanting my name and stuff like that. And so many people reached out and they're like, I've never heard of you in my life, but like, you're the only thing I've seen on social media for the past week. Like, you must be important if it's this big of a deal.
So yeah. The controversy kind of spiked a whole slew of conversation online about you.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. So you kind of captured the momentum, even though you didn't even play.
Yeah. That's I tried, you know, more. I wish that I had played, but it worked out for me, you know?
Yeah. Well, you can't cater to the headliner, your set, you know, like.
Right. I mean, it's so funny because it's happened more. I remember I was opening up for Rez, and I was super stoked. And this is also when I was, you know, younger, and I guess different cities and people do it differently, but I'm opening up for Rez, and I get yanked off stage by this like huge dude. And he was just like, what are you doing? Like, you're an opener. No one cares about you. Like, you gotta just like, you know, play elevator music basically. And so it was funny because still to this day, and when I moved to Colorado, like I got my first booking and I'm like in the emails and I'm like, hey, like, have you listened to my music? Have you listened to my mixes? Like, am I allowed to play this? Blah, blah, blah. And it's funny because people here, like, obviously we listen to you and you can play whatever you want because we booked you.
Yeah.
But I'm still like, still to this day, scarred a little bit. Just like, all right, well, like, I don't want to play, even if it's my own music. I'm like, I got to tone it down a little bit. You know, you're not the star of the show, but I do find that it's kind of a ridiculous thing to me. How people are just like, oh yeah, I'm going to pay you to play, but also don't play your music and don't like,
you don't one up them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting. I haven't heard it from this perspective. That it doesn't sound right to me. You know, some of the favorite shows that I've seen sometimes are the opener. It's like, oh my God, I didn't even know who these people were prior to tonight. And I'm stoked. I'm a new fan, you know, excited about the music. So I think it's a great opportunity to cross pollinate crowds, you know, to work with other artists. So that's a bummer to hear that some people are like trying to get you to not stand out.
I mean, I do kind of get it too. You know what I mean? It depends on the artist or the venue. And that's like, if you're playing doors, you know, you shouldn't be swanging, screeching dubstep to a crowd of five people. You know what I mean? So I think every situation kind of, there's appropriate times for certain songs and not, but I remember, the people who actually gave me my like first big show, or like big DJ was opening up for Zomboy. And the only reason I got it was, there's, you know, a ton of people have resident DJs and, you know, their go-to people, and it's hard sometimes to break into the scene when some kid's opening every single week. And I remember being at this party and talking to the promoters. I was like, listen, like, you know, I get this guy, you know, does exactly what you want him to, plays a set. And also, like, it's his job. Like, he's got a wife and kids and a house all from doing this thing. And I was like, but, like, I'm an artist and, you know, I was like, you could tell me that I'd never play a show for you again, and I will still do this until the day I die. And I was like, so wouldn't it be more fun to be like, oh yeah, instead of we threw the same people on every week, like, oh, we gave this kid a chance and like, look at him now. And, you know, we were the people who helped him get there. And I remember I said, you know, some speech to that effect. And the next day I got a call from them and they were like, hey, do you want to open for Zomboy? And I was like, absolutely, I do.
Nice. But you had to advocate for yourself, go out there and not like be passive, not wait for somebody to book you. You were pestering them like, yo, I see the same lineup day after day. Like, I'm right here. Like, this, that's great. What other examples of that have like kind of come up in your life as far as like reaching out and being active with your music?
I mean, I guess it would even be like where I am now and even moving to Colorado, and having the confidence to do that and take a plunge. One of the biggest things I was, thinking about moving here, and I was crashing on my friend's couches. And Phil Savaggio, who is the owner of Mammoth Music Group and, you know, one of my heroes, manages the Pretty Lights, you know, is an engineer, super talented guy with talented circle. And I'm like in Colorado with my CBS headphones on, trying to work on some song. And, he took the headphones out. He was like, let me listen to it. He was like, I think you should do this. I was like, okay, great. And then did that. And I was like, oh boy, like I really got to move here. If like people that huge are giving me, you know, the opportunity. And then I moved here and I aligned myself with those people, you know, like Sodown, Matty O'Neill, people who are, you know, my associates, but also like my heroes. And I've really just gone up to them and just been like, hey, like, no big deal if you're too busy or anything, but like, please check this out. You know, I'd really appreciate it. And then fast forward 3 years later, now MMG is managing me. It's like all the people who I, you know, really look up to are kind of in my circle, which I don't think I would have ever been if I didn't just, you know, kind of insert myself in there and, you know, maybe show up to one or two parties where people are like, who the heck is this kid? And I'm just like, oh, hey, I'm Danny, you know, nice. Play it as cool as possible. I think you got to be pushy, but you can't be obnoxious about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's a balance.
Yeah. Yeah. I really think, you know, being around people is great and stuff, but like everybody can tell whether you're like buying a car or shoes or at a table and someone's trying to upsell you on the most expensive steak, like people know when they're being sold to.
Yeah.
So I think just like being around those people without being pushy and then kind of having the product. So whenever, you know, we might be in the studio and people are like, oh, does anybody else have something to show? And I'm just like, yes, you know, and kind of step up and give them the product and then be like, oh, you like, or
that's important. I mean, you have to be surrounded by people who could give you the critical feedback and help take you to the next level or connect you to somebody else who can. So that's critical. Has your past couple of years been upended? Like, when did you start? Like, how did, you know, lockdown affect your process?
Yeah, it was so interesting because, like, as you know, the pandemic was happening, I was getting ready to quit my day job. I was like, all right, like, I'm gonna have enough gigs. Finally, you know, worked so hard to just be able to do this full time. I was so excited. I was like, all right, by like June or whatever, like, you should be good. And then that happened, and I had no shows, but the bar that I work at, who I absolutely love, I would die for all of them, let everybody go except like me and four people, I think. I worked like 7 days a week, which was kind of nice because I think a lot of people went a little crazy during the pandemic, and I had, you know, at least a valid excuse to get out of the house.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd be like doing takeout and talking to old ladies and be like, oh, what are you up to? And they'd be like, tell me all about it. And
yeah.
They'd be like, I haven't talked to anybody in weeks. And I'm like, oh, talk to me. You know, I'm doing nothing.
That's funny.
Yeah. And then I went from just kind of helping them out to becoming the assistant general manager there. So now I have that job security, but we also have locations in Aspen, DTC, and Las Vegas. And the owner who owns everything reached out to me because he knows that I make music. And so he's ended up flying me to Vegas a few times to DJ at his restaurant in Vegas. And then I've been commissioned to curate the music for the restaurants. So now when you walk into the restaurant in Vegas, it's my 5-hour long mix. We play at our restaurant too, which is a super easy conversation starter for my career, because people will be like, oh, I really like the vibe here. Like, this music is sweet. And I'm like, great, I did it.
Nice.
I think that it's a pleasant surprise, because, you know, these people got my back and I had that financial security. And now that shows are coming back, they also are like aware that, you know, this is my whole thing. So to be able to have time off to kind of get my money right, you know, get my health right, get into the gym and stuff like that, I think was honestly beneficial. I think not playing out and not meeting people stinks, you know. It's super awesome to play shows and just see everybody together vibing and enjoying each other's company and meeting strangers. So missing that was a really big thing. But having some time to myself and not feeling obligated to have to go to a show or have to support a homie's thing, I think was also really beneficial to my mental and career and, you know, time to explore.
What would you say is your X factor? Like, what gives you an edge?
I really think it's my live shows, which was a bummer during the pandemic. But I really think that anybody who has come see me play live has become like a for life fan. There's something about, you know, the energy that I bring. It goes back to when I didn't know how to DJ. My whole strategy was like, I'm just going to go, you know, as hard as I can on stage and really just like give everybody as much energy so that when I mess up, they're too distracted by me going bonkers that they won't even know. And then I kind of just took that and then stopped messing up, but still keep that energy. You know, it's kind of my favorite thing in the world is like on stage, you're connecting with people and you might see someone in the absolute way back who's like got their hand up, and then you like point at them. They realize that, you know, they like the song and you guys share a moment. And yeah, I just think the way I miss, and like I said, playing like so many different genres, but still having it be a cohesive piece is something that I don't think a lot of people do.
So outside of music, what are you into? What lights you up?
Oh boy. I love Lord of the Rings. Huge fan. Big fantasy guy. I used to love sports. Big soccer guy, Tottenham Hotspurs. Me and my whole crew, you know, got some group chats, talk about it all the time. But yeah, really, it's just music, gym, cooking, and home. You know, I work so much on the music and enjoy it so much that I don't really need a lot of other stuff. So it's always funny if people are like visiting and they're looking for recommendations. They're like, well, what do you do? I'm just like, oh, well, I go to work and then I go home and I work on music. So if you don't want to do that, I don't know what to tell you, you know?
For sure. Well, it sounds like you're very consistent with your approach to music. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. I mean, advice I could give, or the reasons why I am where I am today, is because I've never stopped working on it. It's just something that I really want to do, and you know how I pass up my time. But I even remember telling my rap manager back in the day, you know, there were these kids and even today there's, you know, a different SoundCloud rapper every day or stuff like that. And there are these kids getting all these shows, and I was just like, why am I not getting these shows? And basically they're like, well, this guy's hot right now and they can sell the tickets and you're not as big. And I remember being like, well, like you just said, this guy's hot right now. Like, I guarantee year down the line too, like, he's going to fade out, not, you know, be in the scene anymore. I was like 55 years down the line, like, I will still do this because this is just what I do. And sure enough, even though I'm not in the rap game anymore, there's so many people that I, you know, don't make music at all anymore. And I think that longevity or just, it's just what I do. So
what gives you the confidence in like the long-term time horizon? Like, do you set long-term goals like that?
Yeah. I think it's just a straight up pat. It's really just what I like to do and how I like to spend my time. So I have no doubt that, you can be successful. I mean, I think there's so many times, like in this day and age, you see the next 16-year-old prodigy and stuff like that. And it's really, really discouraging. 'Cause you're like, damn, you know, I'm getting a lot of gray hairs. I'm getting tired.
They already made it.
Yeah. Yeah. But then you see, you know, people like Claude Von Stroke, Armin Van Buuren, they didn't even start until they were 35. Or, you know, there's a lot of DJs or artists, who are huge, in their older years. Like, I mean, I've always said, even if, you know, electronic music doesn't take off for me, I will be a 55-year-old man with an acoustic guitar and a gravelly voice doing some Johnny Cash type thing. So I wouldn't say that it's necessarily confidence in my ability. It's just that, like, it's just what I will always do, you know?
So for anybody out there listening who doesn't already know you, know where to find your music or to reach out on social media, what are the best links and platforms?
Spotify and Spotify, SoundCloud, iTunes. Those are all on there. If you want to connect with me personally, Instagram is just at Underlux Music. It's the platform that I use the most to communicate with people. So you can see, you know, on my stories what I'm up to day to day. It's a lot of content of my kitten and me working on music. But yeah, so Spotify, SoundCloud. I think SoundCloud is a good one, because I do have a lot of like unofficial remixes and stuff that, you know, we can't officially put on, the other platforms. But yeah, those are where you can find me. You really just gotta
nice.
And what about my name and I'm there.
All right. Well, the last question's for you, just open-ended. Is there anything else that you want to share with me or the audience or the world?
Yeah. If you are into music, you know, thank you for listening. I appreciate, you know, you and everybody giving me the time of day and letting me do what I love. If it's something that you or, you know, anybody listening wants to do, feel free to reach out to me for advice. I love, you know, answering questions to the best of my ability. And then everybody should go check out a bunch of my friends. If you haven't already gotten super into them, you should be listening to like Sodown, Matty O'Neill, Marvel Years, my buddies Josh Feds and Westside. If you love, you know, house and tech house, they're super dope guys on the come up. And keep your eyes peeled, keep doing what you love, and thank you for letting me do what I love.
Awesome. Well, Danny, thank you so much for your time, for being open here on the podcast, sharing some of your tools, strategies, and just sharing your music. Thanks, man.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
Listening to the Frio Music Podcast with Michael Morahan. Be sure to like, subscribe, and hit that notification bell so you don't miss a single episode. And don't forget to share this podcast everywhere. Thanks for listening. And until next time, stay tuned.
To free your music.
Stay tuned.